First, it's Food Friday, and this week we're talking about Native American food traditions and how they're being maintained in Wisconsin today. Our next guest works with tribal seed savers, farmers, and restaurants to reconnect people to their roots through food and cooking, and she has some recipes to share with us as well. Elena Terry is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation and executive chef at Wild Berries, a Madison-based nonprofit she started to keep indigenous food traditions alive and empower tribal communities through food sovereignty. She also works with the Intertribal Agriculture Council for the Great Lakes region, and she's food and culinary coordinator for the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance. Elena, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us some about what inspired you to do the work you're doing with keeping these food traditions alive?
Well, I think first and foremost, it just feels good to be connected through food and to be able to utilize these ingredients on the level that I do and to have access. It's just an amazing thing. I love going to work every day.
Can you talk about some of the ingredients you've been working with and that Native American communities have, cared for and stewarded over the generations?
Absolutely. Well, one of the main things are the three sisters, so the corn, the beans, and the squash. And there are so many varieties being kept from, you know, multiple nations across the states and really the Americas. And so the corn is always fascinating. In this region, we're lucky enough to have wild rice, and there are so many different varieties of rice as well. And it's really neat to be able to have that when it has been traditionally processed. And the flavor is just incredible. And the beans, there's so many varieties from a deep dark purple to a small white bean. It's just really neat to be able to see how different the regions have ingredients that vary, but they're all similar.
For a lot of us, our cooking starts in the kitchen and at the grocery store or farmer's market. You are going back further on the supply chain, I understand, and helping make sure that there are seeds for what we might call heirloom varieties and things like that, that farmers are connecting with these seeds and growing some of these ingredients. Can you talk about some of your efforts?
Absolutely. So with the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance, we also work with the Indigenous Seed Keepers Network. And they really are the ones that care for these seeds. It's pretty amazing that we are able to trace back the ancestry of these seeds for hundreds of years and know where they were grown, even sometimes what families specifically grew these seeds. So to have those be able to make it through, you know, the moves that Indigenous people endured or, you know, displacements and still be able to have those ingredients that are ancestral, that, you know, have kind of carried us and nourished us through the years, it's amazing. So we like to get those out to the communities and, you know, support them. They also have a program where they have a rematriation where these seeds are going back to their home tribes and communities and kind of being gifted back so that they can have those ingredients again.
Wow. Can you tell us a couple of the stories of those seeds, the particular crops, the particular food items we're talking about?
Absolutely. So for just personally, I have a seed saver that is an amazing farmer and grower, and she grows out certain ingredients for me every year. And we had corn in different varieties that were Ho-Chunk, and then we were able to get Ho-Chunk squash that can be traced back a few hundred years. And that came last year. And we were saying to complete the sisters, we really needed to find a bean, but even the Smithsonian seed keeping didn't have a trace of a Ho-Chunk bean. But out of the blue last year, a bean came to me in the mail from one of my friends in Kentucky that is a steward of seeds. And it was just amazing to see that, you know, we were looking for them, and then all of a sudden they came. And it's really a neat acknowledgement. Some tribes even give their seeds, you know, tribal enrollment to protect them and to give them rights to make sure that they will continue.
We're talking to Elena Terry on this week's edition of Food Friday. Elena is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation and founder and executive chef at the Madison-based nonprofit Wild Berries. I want to check out one of the recipes you've shared with us, Elena. We've got that online at WPR.org/Food Friday. Now, one of my favorite times of year is fall. I love squash, and you've got this Sasquatch recipe shared with us. Can you tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah, so squash is my favorite ingredient, and I really think it's underutilized. So I like to kind of put it on the forefront, and it's really a delicious dessert. And we use flaxseed instead of eggs, so it really is vegetarian. And I think we have a nut crust on there, so it kind of gives it a crispy bottom with some cranberries is what holds it together, and it gives it just a little bit of sweetness. And then the main sweetener is maple syrup. So everything is regional to us in that recipe.
And it ends up being a squash, as you said, with kind of a nutty crust, and it's sweet. It's got kind of a autumn spice package going in it.
Yeah, it's similar to a pumpkin pie, but there's not like a pie crust. It's a nut crust instead. And then the squash just gives it a different, almost slightly savory flavor as well. It's really delicious. I'd recommend trying it to anybody that can access that recipe.
It sounds really good, and you made a statement that I agree with as much as anything I've ever heard on this show. Squash is underutilized. Can you talk about some of the other great ways we can use our various kinds of winter squash? I know I'm dreaming a few months ahead here.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, it preserves really well, and you can dehydrate it even and make that into flour to use. There are so many different ways to utilize all these different varieties of squash, from, you know, the seeds to even being able to eat the skin on some of them. A simple roast even will highlight the flavor. But there are so many different varieties and so many different even textures and, you know, their ability to absorb water. So some of them I like to use it as a soup base, where some of them I would like to roast and maybe put into a casserole. So there's so many different varieties and ways to treat a squash. I would just encourage people. It's not super difficult, although there are some pests that like to eat the squash as well, but it does thrive. And so it's something that you can grow at home and then use throughout really almost until the winter time and through winter if you preserve it well enough.
Squash flour. I don't think I've ever even heard of that.
Yeah. So we dehydrate the squash and then, make it into a powder after that. And you can use that as a thickening agent for soup or to flavor breads. It's really a neat ingredient.
Well, I know you do the work with seed saving. And of course, I know you work on the cooking end of things. Is this something else you work with people on, bringing back or preserving food preservation and processing techniques?
Yes. So Wild Berries actually is a community outreach nonprofit where we work with tribal members who are overcoming alcohol and other drug abuse issues or emotional issues, and just give them a way to reconnect to our community through food. You know, everybody has this need to eat, and being able to prepare a meal for your community really gives you accountability and ownership, and it's a great way to link back when, you know, I think all of us at some point have suffered some sort of a disconnect, and it's a great way to offer a bridge back to the community. So we work on that with Wild Berries and also with educating the greater community on these ingredients, getting them into the household. I personally believe that the more our ancestral ingredients are talked about, are grown, are utilized, the better chance they have for sustainability and that they will be there for future generations.
We're talking with Elena Terry, member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, executive chef at the nonprofit. She was just talking about Wild Berries. We're talking about indigenous ingredients, especially here in the Wisconsin area, and tribal food sovereignty on this week's edition of Food Friday. We've got some recipes from Elena at WPR.org/Food Friday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are the foods we've been talking about so far part of your own family history or tribal history? Do certain foods make you feel connected to your roots? You think it's important to be connected to the ingredients we use from seed to harvest? And have you done things like a seed saving using heirloom ingredients that are local to your part of the state or the region? Or do you have a question for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday. We're talking to Elena Terry, executive chef at the nonprofit Wild Berries, about maintaining tribal food traditions in Wisconsin today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are ingredients indigenous to Wisconsin a part of your family history, maybe your tribal history? Do you have a question about some of the ingredients, the seeds, the techniques Elena is talking about? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Find a couple recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. That squash one we were talking about earlier, and another really good one. I'll tease that. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Right now, let's go to your calls. William is with us in Milwaukee. William, hello.
Hello there.
What do you want to tell us about, William?
I actually worked for Potawatomi for a good few months last year, and during that time, we had an Indigenous Foods Month, and at the big celebration there, I actually had the wonderful opportunity to talk with a someone who works here in Milwaukee who is actually part of a Seed Saver program, and they were kind enough to gift to me both a single cob of Oaxacan corn and a couple pods of this heirloom beans that I've sadly forgotten the name of. And today I'm actually going to be planting them in a Three Sisters garden. So I just wanted to share that and know that, hey, I want to try and keep these traditions alive, even though I'm not technically tribal myself.
William, thank you so much for sharing that story. Elena, a Three Sisters garden. That sounds great.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm glad that you're taking the initiative and you feel a connection to those seeds and the responsibility to grow them. So, good for you. I'm glad that you have that opportunity.
Let's talk a little bit more about corn, Elena. I think we have a couple varieties that we run into in grocery stores and might not think of corn as having a ton of variety behind it. Could you open our eyes a little bit to the world of corn that is available to us?
Oh, corn. Yes, absolutely. So the corn that we use primarily isn't what you would get in the grocery store. It would be more of the colored corn that you'd see at the fall harvest time. And that can range in so many different ways. I could talk corn all day, but we have growers that grow out things from a pure white variety, which the Oneidas have, and it's a beautiful corn, to, a strawberry red popcorn that is still an ancestral corn. So there's different ways of processing that corn for different ways of utilizing it, and just to make sure that it'll be preserved for the long haul. So you can save it on the cob, like William had mentioned, and use that for seed, or you could use that dried corn and nixtamalize it and make it into hominy. You could also partially boil it while it's still in the milky stage and then take it off the cob and dry it, and then that would be like a soup corn. So there's a lot of different ways that you can utilize all these different corns, and even from coloring, a black corn that has a higher sugar content, or a bright purple corn that you would use for flour. There's so many different varieties. But if you like corn, I definitely encourage you to do some research and to find out how incredibly diverse it is in different regions and how many different kinds there are instead of just the sweet corn that you're used to.
William, thanks a lot for the call. I'll drop by for dinner maybe mid-September. Let's go back to your calls now. Mark is with us in New Berlin. Mark, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering how much your guest feels about foraging for mushrooms. I've been doing this for years, and we get about 6 months of foraging in Wisconsin for different types of mushrooms coming out now in early spring and all the way through October. And, of course, then ramps as well.
All right. Foraged mushrooms, Elena.
Yes. I mean, I'm anxiously awaiting morels to pop up because I've just talked to one of my friends in Oklahoma who had an incredible harvest, and I was a little jealous. So, yes, those ingredients, I mean, they offer such a different flavor, and it's something that is from nature. I would just make sure to put it out there that when you do forage and you do take from the land, that you do it in a responsible way and that you don't over forage, you know, especially when it comes to something like ramps that people do appreciate, and it does have such a unique flavor, and you can dehydrate that and preserve it, but just to make sure to do it responsibly and that there is enough to continue on.
Thanks for that call. Elena, let's talk some more about that, because I know that's part of your effort too, the seeds that we grow on purpose, but can you also talk about stewardship of these wild ingredients that we use, but as you say, don't want to overuse?
Yeah, so the ingredients that come from the forest, especially in times like this where, you know, food sovereignty is at the forefront of a lot of conversations. And there is a lot, especially in the state of Wisconsin, that you can get from the woods and, you know, from the land naturally. So many different kinds of varieties of mushrooms or even asparagus, berries. They're all very plentiful, but it is a matter of making sure that you don't ever over harvest so that they will be able to come back the next year or that they will have seeds to disperse and they can continue to thrive. So it is something that you have to be aware of, but it shouldn't be a deterrent. And to make sure that where you do go, it's either on, you know, land that it is approved to be doing that on, to be harvesting something from.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Elena Terry with the Madison-based nonprofit Wild Berries. She's also food and culinary coordinator for the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance. I want to turn now, Elena, to the other recipe you shared with us. We have this up at WPR.org/Food Friday. This looks so good and pretty simple. Bison meatballs. Can you tell us about these?
Yeah, so the bison meatballs, we did a casino takeover at Ho-Chunk Casino in Wisconsin Dells, and it was one of the things that we featured on the buffet, and it is wonderful. Bison is a really good alternative red meat to beef, and the health benefits for that, consuming it, is a lot better because it is a lean meat. But when you do a lean meat like that, you want to add some extra, you know, moisture. So I added the dried berries to that. And it just ends up being, you know, where you can sear all sides of it and let it roast for just a couple minutes. It's a wonderful, wonderful meatball. And, you know, my family loves when we have meatballs and make that one.
Now, on this ingredient list, I want to amplify one ingredient here. You've got the bison, okay, wild rice. That makes a lot of sense. I want to key in on dried blueberries in the meatballs. What are they going to do there?
Yeah, so they'll add not only flavor and texture, but moisture, and they also help bind the meat together. So it kind of helps hold it differently than, say, a breadcrumb.
That sounds fantastic. Again, if your mouth's watering, you can find that at WPR.org/Food Friday. Elena, I want to get back to your work now with Wild Berries. And I should say, if people are looking for that online, it's spelled B-E-A-R-I-E-S. The people you work with, as you said, might be facing challenges in their lives, connecting to these food traditions, helping them out. Can you tell us more about, you know, the people who come through the program and what they get out of it?
Absolutely. So, like I mentioned before, I think that all of us can say at some point we felt a disconnect from, you know, maybe family or community, and for a lot of cultures, not only Indigenous people. Sharing a meal is one of the highest things that you could do for somebody, you know, and welcoming them to your home or to the community. And this just gives a way for our participants to show that kind of ownership back to the community and teach life skills. We talk about budgeting, about sourcing ingredients, and then a way to show pride and to share that knowledge. And it really is about sharing knowledge. So it is ultimately a mentorship program where regardless of whatever level, I think that we all also have been affected at some point from alcohol and other drug abuse issues. If it isn't personally
something that you struggle with, it's affected all of us on some level. So really what I wanted to do was make it a nurturing space for the participants to come and know that there wasn't judgment, but we would help, you know, along the way and give support. And really ultimately that support ends up being support for the knowledge on continuing these food systems.
And then when people come through the program, do they go out and take these traditions on to other people?
Absolutely. That's one of the expectations is that, you know, if you entered this program and it's a good way and you gain something, it's a responsibility of yours now to share that knowledge in the same, you know, positive environment and in a good way so that the knowledge continues. And that's how it has been passed down for generations so that we're able to still have it now.
In our last few moments, Elena, you know, spring headed on to summer. What ingredient are you really excited about this time of year?
Ooh, this time of year. I mean, I'm really excited to get out into the woods and get some of those morels in the ramps. And then also, I mean, there's so many different seasonings from sumac to cedar that you can get. And just watching them all come back and kind of wake up after winter, it is an exciting time of year. So I think getting out into the woods is going to be something that I'm really looking forward to. And then I'm really excited to see what my growers are going to be putting in the ground for me here in the next couple weeks as well.
Elena, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a wonderful conversation.
That's Elena Terry, a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, an executive chef and founder of the nonprofit Wild Berries. She also works with the Intertribal Agriculture Council, and she's the food and culinary coordinator for the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance. She talked to us about how she's working with other people to keep indigenous food traditions alive here in Wisconsin. Find the recipes we talked about, the bison meatballs and that squash recipe. Find them at WPR.org/foodfriday.